Hey, everybody. In this week's episode, because of what comes up in this episode, I could put a little bit of a content warning. There is some talk of sexual assault, so just want to make y'all aware of that before hopping on in. Here's the episode. Hey, Dylan.
Yeah, Coop, what's up?
Dude, you remember the Japanese word for whale? let me tell you about the Kujira.
He says
my
it
dude.
A lot, so you yeah, think I does. Wouldn't know. I know we haven't really started talking about the episodes yet, but I just wanted to get this out of the way because I feel like it's self-evident. I love Neki Basara. I love this idiot so much, you have no idea.
Yep, this tracks. This tracks.
Hi, I'm Neki Basara, and welcome to Jackass.
And this is the whale chug. Oh, boy. But before we get into all of that, as always, I'm Coop with that Mr. Sultry Dylan over there.
Yes, that's
how have
me.
You been? How have you been, my dude?
I've been doing pretty well. It's been like a blah week, but not terrible bad. But yeah, no. I don't know where I'm going with this conversation. I'm sorry. How are you today, Coop?
I'm doing good. Like, kind of like what you're saying. It's been. I mean, we're living in times, Dylan. In the yes. times.
And this I'm certainly also is an age.
So yeah, it is an age. Not of Ultron. That movie was, but you know, we
we're
subside
in the age of Disney.
But yeah, the only other big thing I can think of aside from, like, you know, doing the living thing is that Metroid Dread video game and how good it is. I
it
saw
is
you were playing
fun.
A bit of it.
Yeah, I haven't had time to, like, really sit down and, like, play, but I got the, it's not called the phase shift, but, you know, whatever Samus's new air dash is, and I've been playing around with that a little bit, but I haven't gotten super far in the game. That Crate boss fight's really fucking fun, though, I'll tell
yeah.
you that much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think so far I'm still leaning towards Super Metroid as the GOAT. That could just be nostalgia. That could just be my familiarity with that game. But I do really enjoy Metroid Dread. I feel like Metroid Dread is, as far as like traditional 2D Metroid goes, like Metroid Dread's probably a close second. I'd have to replay Zero Mission to finalize my opinion on that.
And it's hard to, because I've noticed like in Twitter discussions with Wonder Magenta and some other folks, like it is very hard. Like I almost feel, and I've said this before, like you need to put Super off in its own box and
right.
kind of look at the other Metroid games for just strictly what they are, because it always gets
in a way Super Metroid's
a,
kind of the Melee of the Metroid games.
Now that you say it, yeah.
Like that skill ceiling is like astronomically high, and that's kind of what draws people to it. Mm-hmm. But it does feel like really weird and stiff if you've never touched it before.
Absolutely. Though it will be interesting to see, speaking of like skill ceilings and stuff, how the speed run turns out, because they're already
I'm
down
very
to
excited to see how people route this game,
because it's already down to an hour 35 and there's already been multiple skips, and I won't give specifics, but they're intentional things in the game that the devs put in. It's like, oh, you did a secrets break, we'll have this nice little thing Like, so I started playing through it again on hard. I don't know when I'll get back to it, but I 100%ed it, and I don't do that with that kind of game. Like, I just don't, and I did it with this, so I think that
I'm not a completionist something. By any means. I think so. The only game I've ever completed was A Link to the Past. So I definitely get that vibe where you're just like, yeah, I'll fucking just vibe in this game until everything's done.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when speed booster puzzles come into play, because there were a lot of moments where I was like, okay, so I had to look at a video to see how it was done, and then just the process of figuring out how to get your hands in the right crazy place to do a speed booster puzzle right, or how to work out the logistics.
Like, I remember AM2R had some really great speed booster puzzles.
I should check that out.
Yeah, like, I highly recommend it. Samus Returns is pretty good from what little I played, but, like, you know, AM2R, I feel like if Dread's got you fiending for some more Metroid, and you don't have the means to play Zero Mission specifically, but, like, I'll throw Fusion in with that, I feel like AM2R is probably a very good recommendation.
Yeah, I've been interested in that. I don't know. I feel like revisiting those. I don't feel like revisiting Super anytime soon since I played it a couple months ago.
I can play Super Metroid just like at the faintest suggestion. Like, do I have 2 hours to kill? All right, yeah. Let me just run through Super Metroid real quick.
I think it'd be easier for me to attempt to do that now than like before having played it the first time, which is like a no duh kind of thing. Right, right. But at the same time, it's like, oh, it took me at least 5 times for my brain to do the interfacing with this game so I could go ahead and play it. So
I will say, if you saw Wonder Magenta's thread on asking like how we configure our Super Metroid setups, like everyone has a wildly different way to like make it feel manageable, because those default controls are probably like the most poorly aged thing about the game.
I'd say that, because I think me having my Mega Man brain rot is I configured it to be like Mega Man X, and then
so this is getting a little far away from our podcast, but like I just to give you an idea on like what I did, because I was also approaching Super Metroid from a Mega Man X point of view. When I played the game on the Virtual Console, the select button is mapped to the Z button, so I was able to map my shoulder button that way. And
that works way better.
Yeah, absolutely. Weapon select was the Y button. Weapon cancel to go back to the power beam was the X button. And then A and B are jump and shoot interchangeably. I feel like it changes every time I start that game up.
Because I think how I did it, because I played it on 3DS, it was left trigger was I hold down to dash, and then right trigger is the normal just point up and shoot, and then I think I made like X or Y the button you press to cycle through weapons. And then I swapped around to A and I made it Mega Manny, because my brain went, oh, I don't remember what the buttons are, so let's trick my brain into thinking that these face buttons are triangle, cross, circle, and square.
Right. That's more or less what I do whenever I play it on emulator. I specifically map, when I play on my computer, I specifically map the select button to R1. Specifically for Super Metroid.
Yeah. I almost wonder if, like, Super Metroid was obviously people have heralded since it came out, but I wonder with, obviously, let's be honest, most of the people around our age and younger who've played it, you know, there are people who buy it, but most of them probably have emulated it. I'm taking a hot guess.
I think it's kind of like a Chrono Trigger in that regard, because I know a lot of people, when they first played Chrono Trigger, it was through emulation.
Yeah. So that way, you know, whatever issues they had with the controls weren't really an issue because they could just map it. However, it wasn't really a big deal. So, yeah, I can say after this, I whipped out my 3DS and have started Samus Returns again. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm more interested to see how, because Mercury's team is obviously going to be lit. They're going to be given another Metroid.
I feel like they're going to be the Metroid guys for at least another half decade.
Which I'm okay with, because the game is solid and you can see that they definitely have cut their chops and worked their way up to it. So, even despite the fact that Lords of Shadow has issues, I still like those games. It just has that little bit of Euro jank on it, and then Nintendo comes on and is like, "Yo, you have potential. Let us smooth off the Euro jank for you a little bit, and you'll be all good to go." So I appreciate that. It's a good game. I'm looking forward to it. And also, I got a hankering to play Metroid Prime. So we'll see on that, because that's been another super.
Have you ever played Metroid Prime before?
I've had the same Super Metroid problem where I've tried it like five times and never.
So I think I had the same issue. I started with Prime 2, which is even harder.
Same, actually, because I played a good bit of Prime 2 back when it came out.
But I rented Prime 1, and I was like, oh, wait, this game is so much easier to jump into. And so then I bought Prime 1, but then I never got too far into it. But I beat Super Metroid with the help of a Let's Player, and that same Let's Player did a series on Metroid Prime. And I watched the first couple parts and then kind of realized what the flow of Metroid Prime actually is, because it's like, you have to think of the entire world as one Zelda dungeon. It's not section by section like Metroid Prime 2 is.
Gotcha.
And it's also not, like, I feel like Super Metroid does, like, a very good job of, like, linearly guiding you through the world. Especially, like, you know, now that I have, like, a route in my head, it's basically two loops around the entire entire world.
I get that.
But, like, Metroid Prime is, like, very backtracking heavy, and, like, that's either gonna make it or break it for you. But, like, I just kind of view the entire game world kind of like the Spencer Mansion in Resident Evil.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, like, that might be a controversial take, but, like, I never really minded the backtracking of Metroid Prime. I think, honestly, it kind of, for me, enhanced the experience. It kind of made the entire world feel familiar over time.
You kind of sold me on it with comparing it to the Spencer Mansion, because the Spencer Mansion, like, you do a lot of backtracking, but it feels like even though you're doing it, you're still going forward no matter the direction you're physically going in the game space. You're still moving forward in the game, which I dig. So
there's this feeling of, like, chipping away at a world that seems like, you know, you're chipping away at it. And you're like, all right, I got this here. Now I have to go all the way over here. But, like, it still feels like, all right, I know where I have to go next. And there's a little bit of excitement to that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, your mileage may vary. I personally like it more than Prime 2. I have to replay Prime 3. It's been a decade.
I will be surprised to see what Prime 4 looks like. Because we've discussed this before. But I remember you not super agreeing with me on this. I think the recent Doom remakes have elements that they should, you know, take a look at for this. Like, they'll do whatever they do, but I felt like the movement in, especially in Eternal, the movement was like very, how can I put this? It's like if you took, in my mind, just because of recency bias, if you took Dread and made it 3D with all your movement options you eventually get, that's the best way I could describe Doom Eternal in my mind. So I feel like a lot of that, and there's a lot of hunting for secrets and stuff like Metroid, and like stuff you shoot that you think you can't shoot, especially in Doom 2016. So I think I don't know. That's just my brain going, if you made it a little doomy, which I feel I could be completely off base, but I feel like isn't Prime kind of like classic computer FPS-y a little bit?
Not quite. I guess it is in like the way that like you technically have key hunts, but like in this case, the keys are your weapons and abilities.
Gotcha.
Honestly, Metroid Prime is kind of like the Spencer Mansion's the first thing to comes to mind. I also want to say like maybe a little bit of Malay Island from the original Devil May Cry, just because
okay.
you know, the Resident Evil DNA's in there. But like, yeah, it feels like a really big Zelda dungeon.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those games are more level based than anything.
Yeah. Like, maybe you might have, I haven't played this game, but like maybe something like, drawing a blank on it. What is the name of Hexen 2? But like with the combat feeling a little bit more like Zelda, Ocarina of Time, Z target.
Gotcha.
Z target circle strafe combat.
It's mostly what's coming to mind. Just I think it's more just from the aesthetics. I haven't played it, but what I've seen of Quake and Quake 2 are mostly what's kind of going in my brain a little bit.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I personally think a little bit of like Quake meets Star Fox Adventures, kind of. Not
yeah,
Star Fox Adventures,
yeah,
but like
actually,
you got
no,
that kind of
wrong.
Like fantasy sci-fi cross section.
Like maybe like a twinge of Galaxy Star, not Galaxy Star, Fantasy Star. There we go.
Like yeah, like Fantasy Star, Final Fantasy 12 ish.
I see
like
that.
This yeah, like they're ancient, or like even something like the Space Colony Arc in Sonic Adventure, where like they have they incorporate the Echidna ruins into the space station technology.
Sonic just shows up in Metroid Prime 4.
Dude, I would clap.
Oh,
like,
boy.
That's something that will only specifically appeal to me, but I don't care. Actually, make Samus fight Perfect Chaos, and we got ourselves a
okay.
stew, baby.
And a new Crush 40 song to go along with
yeah.
it. All right.
All right, it's time to talk about Macross.
Yes. So we're going to talk about some space whales. I just want to cover a couple things here really quick on the news front.
Okay, yeah.
So I got tickets for the first ever live stream international Macross concert. So
oh, shit.
Which is also on my birthday, and it's a Frontier concert. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, all right.
So I'm stoked for that, which also...
Cheryl Gnome! Sorry, go ahead.
Yes. But also fingers crossed, because I will pay... Please do a Fire Bomber concert. Please do a Fire Bomber concert. Please do a Fire Bomber concert. Like, I'll watch a Walk Your concert too, but please do a Fire Bomber concert.
Yo, speaking of Fire Bomber, a lot of the new songs in this OVA are fucking sick.
Yeah.
I really Ooh. Liked a few of them.
Well, let's just hop on into it. The rest of this news here is basically, yo, there's slowly more Macross stuff coming to the States. That's all you need to know. It's in the process.
Right.
It's in the works. You can get some
Goken. And if
you're
listening to this show, I assume you're deep in enough that you already know this.
Yeah, because it's been like a month since all this stuff was announced. But, you know, because life happens, we record a little while later. But that's what it is. But... Are you ready to go into a new frontier, Dylan?
Fuck yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so, episode one. So, Basara's at the apartment, he's watering his plant, and Guvava's like, hey, where are you going? And he's like, hey, you should be with them, but anyways, say hey to everybody, I'm heading out, and he leaves a note. And then we have the opening, dynamite explosion, once again. It's dope. It's dope. And it also shows intercut with it. It it shows Basara traveling, just hitchhiking around the universe. It's pretty good.
Yeah, and it's Gonzo animation. Pour one out for Gonzo.
Oh yeah, it's both the opening and ending were Gonzo.
Yeah.
And then I'll note it right here because the show looks great in general. But did you notice like there's kind of like I don't think it's just the rip we were looking at, but there's kind of like an early digital video artifacting on both the opening and ending.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that. I just kind of figured it was, you know, because I'm pretty sure Gonzo like did primarily digital animation. I don't think they were
really prevalent
before then. I could be wrong on that. And anyone who's listening, feel free to call me out because like I want to learn something new. But that was always kind of my takeaway. I guess I always imagined that digital animation was their thing because when you look at something like Gankutsou, that they were really experimenting.
Yeah,
there.
Now you mention it. Because now that you say it, my brain just really associates them a lot with early DigiPaint in one way or another because they did a lot of that. And how people clowned on them for a little bit because of that, but that's, I don't know what to say.
They were kind of right too.
yeah. Mm-hmm. I noticed the artifacting more in the ending, but we'll get to that when we get to that. So back after we see Sar hitchhiking in the opening, the band has found the note and everybody's confused. Mylene's like, really? Really?
This motherfucker.
Yeah.
It's like Basara, a cat, you leave the door open and he's gone.
Just, yeah. You know what? That sounds about right. This is not the first time he's done that. There was a whole 10 episodes when he did this, or 5 episodes. So, you know, this checks out.
Just his modus operandi.
So Basara lands on the planet of Sola. It has a bunch of oceans and a bunch of cliffs and mountains. Feels vaguely Mediterranean. And he gets to the docks. He's just hanging out. And he finds a group of bandits trying to steal Valkyrie. And the cops show up and he gets shot in the crossfire. How about that? And after like a couple moments, Basara picks himself up. He's like, I told you this about missiles. I'm going to tell you this about shooting. They suck. Now listen to my song. And he starts playing in the middle of a gunfight. And another cop, Liza, shows up and she's like, what are you doing?
Right.
And she's like, I'm going to shoot you up close with a stun gun. Like, this ain't going to be good. And
typical cop behavior.
And then an explosion goes off and she knocks him off the deck and the bandits get away with the Valkyrie and the cops chase after him. And then a little girl who looks like a green Mylene, Elma, shows up. And Liza tells her, no, it was just poachers looking to steal Valkyrie. And Basara comes to, and he's like, God damn, my guitar string is snapped. Elma takes Basara back to her house and patches him up. And she's like, you know, it's good I'm doing this now because with all the whales that come on through here, there's so much bacteria, you know, this could kill you. So let's not. Oh, and you're not a poacher. That's good. She goes on that the poachers were trying to use the Valkyrie to, again, do their stuff with the whales. But this is the prime whaling season. And the reason they want these whales because they're valuable in building ships, apparently. And after a little bit of back and forth, Basara learns, oh, these aren't normal whales. They're space whales.
I feel like the audience gets it way before Basara does, and for him, he's like, wait, the ocean? It's like, no, Bossor, they come to the planet. They gotta be space whales.
Yes. It's great. And Bossor tries to leave the house to go see the whales or go do whatever. And the meds knock him off his feet.
And he is stoned like a motherfucker.
Yep. That's some strong shit. And her Elma's dad, Graham, is nearby. And he's a big man. He's a big hunka-chunka. And he's also kind of grumpy. We learn why here. But in this moment, Elma's like, oh, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Can I just say the face Bossra makes as he sees Graham as he's about to pass out is fucking magical. He's just like, ah, big dude.
Yeah.
I love this idiot so much, and I feel like Dynamite does so much for him.
All the moments with him and Graham are kind of great, but we'll see more of those. So Elma realizes that Bossor is the Bossor from Firebomber, and she's like, "Hey, Dad, this is the guy." And he's like, "Who?" A little later, she's making dinner, and she's pumped and starts singing karaoke on the radio. So it's pretty good. And then back at the Seventh Fleet, Mylene is playing the show on her own with everybody else, and Gamlin's in the crowd. And he visits with her afterwards, and he's like, "You seem kind of out of it." And after everybody leaves, she's like, "Yeah, this felt kind of empty." And outside, Ray's like, "So where did he go off to this time?" And the fetus breaks a stick for once, so you know it might be something. You maybe potentially.
It's a premonition of things to come. What?
What?
What's going to happen to young Neki Bossor? Stay tuned to find. Yeah, okay.
He's gonna get ate by a whale, and he's gonna find Sora and Riku and Goofy. Kingdom Hearts. What?
Only some of them are in Smash Brothers. I'll let you figure out who.
If it has the mouse on it, it's not in the game.
If it's been tainted by the mouse's touch.
Only the anime boy who has been slightly tainted is allowed to come through.
Right, he has enough of an immunity. The Final Fantasy antibodies
are smashing. So while Bossor wanders around the house the next day, he finds a big old diving suit and a rock mural of the whales, and then he hops into Elma's truck after her dad's being all stoic with him, and he just smiles, which is great. And at the music shop, the guy's like, "I can't fix the guitar." Bossor's like, "It's all right. Don't worry about it." And then he goes on to say, "Hey, you should probably stay away from Elma's house because Graham's kind of intense during whale season. It's probably because his wife died 5 years ago and he's gone full Ahab. He has his white whale. So, you know, just you know, take it easy a little bit."
Something, something, sins of the father.
I'm already a demon, Kaz. So, outside the music shop, the poachers recognize Bossor in town. And Bossor heads on back over to their house. And Bossor is tooling around with his guitar. And Graham just stabs a giant whale whisker just in front of the truck. And Bossor notices, oh, there's a piece of string off this whisker. And he's able to restring his guitar with it. And it works just like a charm. And
which is awesome.
Yes. Which also shows this that oddly, despite his gruff exterior, Graham kind of likes Bossor just a little bit.
He's a bro, dude. He's totally a bro.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then after he's all stringed up, Basara gets really pumped about the whales. He wants to see them. Kujira! Kujira!
It's so good. He's just screaming, whales, whales, I want to see. And this hyperactive, dumb, stupid, idiot baby child is also my favorite.
Yeah.
I'll talk about this more after the episode.
Like, the best part of this is when Elma's like, oh, so this is what artists are like.
And you know what? She's right. I'm an artist, can confirm.
Yep. Also a note, this is actually the voice actor singing this for once instead of Fukuyama. So, and that doesn't happen, like, at all. So that's cool.
Right.
And then from seeing this, Elma's like, hey, I want to be your apprentice. And then gunfire happens and the poachers are there. And Graham's like, get in the house. And Elma's like, oh, they might be after the old Valkyrie we have in the shed. And it was my mom's. She was a singer. She sang to the whales a lot. And after a little bit, Basara's like, I'm going to end the fight with a song. And he starts playing, but Graham has, like, kind of a shaky reaction to it. It's like it hits a tense nerve. We also realize, oh, the whales are out. So Graham suits up to go after the whales, and Basara chases after him in the old Valkyrie, mainly because Alma's worried that this last whaling season's going to kill him. And also, as Basara flies off, Alma's cape goes in her face. That's great. But also, like, the shot of Graham's little dinghy taking off, and it's actually, like, this huge space rocket. Like, shit's dope. Shit's dope. But, yeah. So, the cops end up catching wind of this and head off after them. And they're like, anybody who's coming nearby, they're poachers. They're poachers. So we're just going to boom, boom. And finally, once they get in space, the whales show up. And Basara's like,
it's oh, that was a good one.
It's good. So he's into it. And the whales use their force to knock the poacher aside. And Graham's like, screw this, white whale. I'm going to beat you up. And Rita's like, hey, Dad, you should... Elsa's like... Or Elsa? Not Elma. Boy, Liza. There we go. That's the right daughter's name. Liza. Liza's like, hey, Dad, you should stop. But he's not going to. And Basara's like, let me take you on a new frontier. Let me see if I can stop this. So Basara's singing, and the whales are roughing up Graham a good bit. And elsewhere, Gamlin gets a report that, oh, we hear Basara's song energy. He's out there. And the whales have a response to Basara's song. They sing out back at him. And they're shining, but this also causes, and all the commotion causes Graham to be tossed around, and Basara's thrown out of his Valkyrie into the vacuum space. Oh boy, boy! Yep.
That is definitely like a huge fuck off cliffhanger.
And also Parade is like probably my favorite song in this OVA, aside from one other.
It's pretty good.
Like we were talking earlier about, like, the composition stuff looks a little fuzzy, but I really like the idea of Basara just going around the world, different places, and lighting.
Honestly, the fuzzy composition kind of added to the ending for me. I could not tell you why, but I guess it's already, like, you know, we superimposed Basara and, like, rotoscoped him over someone, so it already kind of has this uncanny feel to it, but I kind of like it, and I can't explain why.
You know, now I think about it, I'm kind of there with you, just because a lot of like old video footage just in general has that look to it.
Yeah.
And it's pretty great. So I think it's just jarring when you're used to seeing the character look so sharp in the rest of the episode when you go to this. But yeah.
I think I just chalk that up to being different studio weirdness.
Yeah, there's that too. There's that too. But also like the lighting being matched and all the different shots of Bizarre to the background's great. So it's it's good. That's very good. So Dylan, take me into a new frontier, because I know you have thoughts.
Yeah. This first episode is fucking amazing. It's really fucking good. I think, God, there's like a couple things. I love this planet. I don't know if we caught a name for it. Zola. Yep. It gives me a really hard, I mean, generally speaking, like late 90s PS1 era JRPG vibes. But
I
like
can see that.
To add a little bit more specificity, it really makes me think of Grandia. And I love Grandia. Just the setting, the clothing, like this kind of colorful anime South America. I feel like the, you know, first Sonic Adventure also kind of plays with this a little bit here and there. It's just such a very, that's my comfort food fantasy aesthetic. Love that shit. Can't get enough of it. And, what was I gonna say? Like, I think, cause you already know that I loved Macross 7. Like, by the end of it, I think I had like some issues that like I wasn't aware that I was going to have. And I think that was just a consequence of there being like, the Rogues Gallery was kind of a little too small for the length that they were going. And I think what is interesting and fun about Dynamite is, you know, there's not really a main villain per se. Like, you have the Poachers, but they're like really inconsequential. And then you have the whales, but the whales are just, they're just space whales. They're just vibing. So I think that gives them the opportunity to focus a little bit more on the character drama. Graham's a really fun character. Elma's a really fun character. You know, Basra's Basra. Mylene and Gamlin are over on it's not called the Macross 7, is it? Like, I'm
City 7.
City 7. They're over on City 7 doing their thing, and you know, it's all the stuff I loved about Macross 7, but it just feels a little bit tighter.
I see that.
A little more focused, a little less like monster of the day by way of necessity. Just all really good. This first episode was like holy shit, especially with that ending. And then the new music, oh my god, the new music's so good, Coop. All of it's really good. And maybe part of that is also like these songs haven't been playing over the course of 50 episodes, so they're still new and fresh to me. But and that's not to demerit the other Fire Bomber tracks, they're all really fucking good as well. But it's nice to have new jams by Fire Bomber.
Oh yeah.
I think that's everything I had to say, but
I didn't have like a ton to say because I don't know. I like the first episode. I don't know where my feelings on this OVA are. Like, obviously, I really like Macross 7.
I'm having a little trepidations after episode 2, but I think overall we're still going strong. But like,
I
guess we'll get there.
Yeah, because I think my trepidation of episode 2, I'm kind of there with you. But anyways, speaking of episode 2, let's get on in that. So, Mylene is playing another show without Basara. We get a really good fake out from the audience because Gamlin's wearing the same colored outfit the Flower Girl is. So that's...
Oh my god, they didn't even notice that.
It's good. It's really good.
Wait, let me pull that up real quick. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. While you're looking at that, everybody's in really good fits. They're not in the traditional band garb. They're all kind of vibing. Which I did notice that Vivita's like in the knife thrower outfit from that, like that goofy television special, which is pretty good. But yeah, so while you're looking at Gamlin, she's looking at...
Oh my god, Gamlin is just Flower Girl in it up. Mm-hmm. Fucking, mm-hmm. fucking amazing.
It's a great fake out. I love it. And she's staring at Gamlin the whole time, and she eventually goes a bit silent, and the crowd's like, what's going on? And Vafita's like, I'm just going to start vamping Planet Dance. And... we learn that Liza saved Basara after he got knocked out of his cockpit in some quick flashes. And Mylene's like, oh, I screwed up. I messed up the verses, crowd. Let me start again. And everybody's like, oh, Mylene, you're so precious. Mm-hmm. And Basara got really messed up though. The cops and medical people are really surprised he even wakes up, you know. He's kind of in the same pit as Samu was in Macross Plus, just with not black goo. So he's not doing great.
Although the flashback that shows how he got rescued was like very impressive. I don't know. There was something about the storyboarding, the animation, where it was just like, oh shit, that was so clutch.
I dig how scattershot it was that you're only getting flashes of it because Basara only got flashes of it. That's right. Kind of consistent through his experience throughout the episode, which I dig. And he's woken up kind of, and he vaguely asks about Graham, and Liza's like, oh, he was sent home. He's okay. And back on the planet, Elma, you think absentmindedly drives her car right into the ocean with a bunch of groceries, but no, it's a boat too. How about that? and then back around town, Liza's begging her boss to use live ammo on the poachers. And a little bit, he walks off, and then a science guy shows up. And you know what? Those whales or wavelengths—they're different now because of that rock and roll guy. You know, they responded to him. And Liza's like,
team up with Dr. Chiba, and together they'll unlock the secrets of the universe.
The universe and space whales. It's the best. And Liza's like, no, you're crazy. They didn't make a sound. And science guy's like, you know, Basara could potentially prove that the whales are intelligent. And then he goes on to visit Basara. And he's like, hey, when you wake up, please sing more, please. And a little before this, Liza said, no, he's out of the system when he wakes up, just out of here. And Basara then, after he leaves, tries to get up, and he's staring down his guitar that's sitting at the other end of the room. And then back on City 7, Gamlin tells the rest of the band, it's like, you know, I'd really like to see Mylene go back to her old self on stage. And they're like, well, don't you want to keep her all to yourself with Basara gone? He's like, no. That's not the case at all. No.
Why are these band members razzing Gamlin for wanting to, for the potential of him hanging out with his girlfriend?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Like I get it. Like, she's not like ready for like a full on commitment, but like, they're still dating. They're still hanging out. Like,
uh-huh. We have like 50 episodes of this. Like, come on.
Right. Like, come on now.
Yep. And then he's like, so I found Basara. Don't tell her about it. I'm going after him. And he takes off in a 22 after him. And then Elma, back on Zola, is making dinner again. She's jamming out to the Planet Dance when Basara limps back in. And he's still a mess. And he pretty much falls over. He eventually wakes up, but he's still kind of in a out of it catatonic state. And, excuse me, he wants to go after Graham, but apparently Graham wouldn't stay down either. And they start walking through the forest. And Elma's going through her radio, looking for different songs, and it switches over to a Mylene song, which has a really good cut to where Mylene's recording the music video for that. And afterwards, oh boy, a producer takes her to dinner and tries to cheer her up. It's like, he'll be always back and you won't be lonely. I'm with you. Oh boy. Graham in the forest, he's nowhere to be found. Basara's not feeling great. And then up in space above, the poachers are getting antsy. So are the cops. They show up. But in response to the cops showing up, even more poachers show up with more ships and more Valkyries. And as they're making their way up a hill in the forest, Basara collapses. Elma thinks, oh, it must have something to do with the bacteria. And, oh boy, back to Mylene.
Yeah, here we go.
The producer drugged Mylene. Yeah.
Yeah, huh. I feel like I'm just gonna get this out here right now. I do not like this.
I don't either.
It's gross.
Like, I they keep on referring to a line Basara said, oh, you're still a kid, be careful. But I'm like, you didn't need to put out.
I don't think Macross 7, like, I love Macross 7, I love the characters, I think you can do a story like this. I don't think Macross 7 is the property that should take on a story like this.
Nah. Ugh. Mm.
I'm really not a fan.
Yeah, this is kind of the elephant in the room when it comes to the special.
Yeah, it's gross, it's uncomfortable. This isn't the first time that, like, unfortunately, Mylene's, sexual agency's been taken from her, but it's also, like, the most explicit, and it's also queer-coded, which adds an extra layer of ick to it.
Yeah, it's...
Not queer-coded, it is, like, the sexual aggressor is queer, yeah. And that adds a... I really don't
it's bad taste in mouth all around. It's not
like
good.
Everything else about this OVA so far I've really enjoyed. So to have this is a huge sticking point.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's gonna make it or break this OVA for a lot of people, and for good reason.
Yeah.
And I also just no talking around it.
Yeah, and I also think deeper into it, isn't Mylene like only like 17 or 16
like,
still or something?
She's like, she's
still a minor.
She's 14 or 15. Like, she's young, dude.
Yeah, she's still a minor. So,
and
it's
like
again, what?
Like, they're again, like, you have like these kind of glamour shots that are a little racy, and like that also feels kind of gross to me. I feel like that's more of a symptom of like the fetishization of teen idols, which
yeah.
doesn't excuse it, but like it gives it context. Here it's just like, oh no.
It's just gross here. It's just gross.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Sorry, we can move on.
Yeah.
But I felt like we both had to get our...
Yeah.
Take our stance on this.
Anyway, back to the whales.
Yeah.
Liza,
God, please.
Liza and the cops are fending off the poachers. Elma is carried him up, Basara up to like the base of a mountain or whatever. And
which I will say, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt again,
yeah,
but
go ahead.
Like the physical gag of her carrying him up or carrying him through the jungle and up the mountain, I thought was really funny and cute.
I like that too.
And it did a lot to wash the earlier grossness out of my mouth, even if we will eventually cut back to it.
Yeah.
That was kind of, I'm not going to say it saved it for me, but it was a nice thing in addition to the bad.
Yeah. I won't say it leveled it out, but it just made it. It's like if you like had a mouthful of shit and you took a little bit of mouthwash and the shit taste is still there, but it's just slightly cleaned out.
In the mixed bag that is this episode in particular, I don't know what the rest of the OVA will have in store, but in the mixed bag that is this episode, it is a highlight, but it doesn't excuse the low point. Sorry, yeah, we can continue again. I did want to point out that I really, like, I was laughing a lot at this point, to the point where I almost forgot about the previous scene, but not quite.
But, like, the cute thing about the specific moment, I kind of love that the vulture lands on top of him, and she's like, no, not yet.
He's not dead yet.
No, it's good. And as they keep on climbing up the mountain, there's a lot of interstitial cuts of Liza fighting, and she's like, that's why, like, there's something personal for this with her. And as they keep on climbing, Elma notices, oh, this is my mom's song on the radio. So how about that? And she carries them up to a hot spring or close to it. And she ends up falling down when, like, a really bad screamy track starts playing on the radio. And then he stands up because the whales, and he's like, starts walking. Back in the fight, Liza wants gun, and then, well, okay, so, the beginning of an assault happens in this scene that's not good, that continues on from the drugging we just talked about, so, fuck that, and we go back to the hot spring. And Elma shoves Basara into the hot spring. Elma's like, I still want to be your student. And Liza is surrounded up in the fight, but the pressure of the whales saves her. All the bandits get pushed away. And after, like, just chilling in the hot spring and having some flashes of what happened come back to him, Basara snaps out of it, and he remembers looking the whales right in the eye.
Which, and like... honestly, it was some cosmic horror shit. Like, that eye is terrifying.
Yeah. And that was... it took me a second to realize what that was. Oh, yeah, that is kind of... fuck.
Right.
Yeah. Boy.
Like, it's cool that the whales have eyes and Basara was able to make a connection with the whale and all of that, but that eye is fucking terrifying.
Yeah, it is. Boy. But the next moment, I have this in the notes as a turn-A-ass-turn-A moment when Basara stands up naked in the hot spring and yells, Kujira! It just reminds me of when Loran is up on the hill and screams that he's going to be an adult today. It's great.
Everyone, the moon is the earth is a wonderful place.
Come here. Boy. Mm-hmm. And we find out that Graham, like a good video game secret, was hiding behind the waterfall. Great. And Basara starts singing another song, and through it, we learn that nature is cool, actually.
Really nice montage of the circle of life happening.
Oh, yeah. Everything that touches this light is your domain.
Everything
Simba.
The light touches. That's the whale graveyard, Basara. You must never go there.
Never. Yep, they end up watching the sunset at the whale graveyard, to which when Basara asks about it, Graham's like, this is the graveyard for strong warriors. And that's the end of the episode.
The assault is not great. I also hate where they chose to cut the assault.
Yeah.
Because it's not covered in the summary, they're undressing to get into the hot spring. There's a shot of Elma lifting her shirt off to, you know, jump in. And I'm willing to give the writers enough benefit of the doubt to, like, say this is an innocuous enough thing. Maybe also fan service for the gross types who really developed a sister complex after Castle of Cagliostro.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt and say it's portrayed in the episode innocently enough.
I think that's why my brain went turn A on that, because there's a lot of innocuous-ish nudity in the beginning of turn A that my brain was like, this isn't a big deal, but you cut it in with the middle of a sexual assault.
And that kind of adds an extra layer of grossness to it. It's not great. I really don't like how they handle it. I think we've seen Mai Lin in like similar situations before, but like it's never gone this far, and like the context has never been this.
Because it almost feels like. Like some sleazeball said, because this is an OVA, we need to make it sketchy. Yeah,
it feels like that too. You're not wrong. But like I want to ask, like, could Macross 7 have handled this? Like,
I don't think so. Like. That's a key. That's like this subject matter is a key point in Macross Plus, but it's handled with a lot more depth and care than this feels like I was just joking about. Like, this feels like a and this isn't a joke. The subject matter isn't a joke. But it feels like some person came in and said, this is an OVA, so we got to do this, and this is
to sell, you know, VHS tapes or whatever.
It doesn't, it does not make sense within the context. Now maybe they could have done something like this in this, but not go as far as they did,
right?
Like maybe mention on the dangers and give Gamlin or somebody a good excuse to punch somebody out again. Maybe like
imagine like growing up watching Macross 7, really loving Mai Lin or even identifying with her, and then you see the OVA and this shit happens. It's not cool.
No,
I really don't like it. And I guess it's like, I don't want to see where they go with it. I would rather they just not have had this plot line to begin with, but like, now that we're stuck here, I want to see how they handle it in the next couple episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not expecting a lot, unfortunately. But at the same time, like, if an attempt was made, if they tackle it in a way that feels interesting, compelling, or nuanced, I can be like, this was a misfire, but I can see what they were going for and at least give them, I don't want to say points, but, you know, I can extend some understanding, some sympathy there. But as it stands right now, it's not great, and it's a huge mark against me recommending this OVA to anyone. Macross Plus is one thing, Berserk is one thing. Like, I feel like those shows tackle that, and like, you know, they're about betrayal of trust. Here it's just like, oh, this one-off character we've never met before, who is also a lesbian, like, is also a predator, and, you know, like, here's some shots of this 15-year-old girl. I don't like it.
Yeah, it's disgusting. It's
like too many bad things without any of the setup or really proper nuanced examination, and I throw it in the garbage.
Yeah, it's like I was thinking to myself this morning while getting around that, like, I don't know what I'll think about these last two episodes, since it'll be a while since I've seen it all, but my brain was like, you know, if they cut this into a 90-minute movie and cut this stuff specifically out, I think it would be a pretty solid package. That's what my brain was going to this morning.
Like, you know what? I could see that.
Like, fuck.
Any video editors out there, let's do the Macross 7 Dynamite I gotta think of a clever name, but, you know, the no rape cut, please, God.
Only whales cut.
Only whales cut, thank you.
Yep.
It sucks that, like, there's so much stuff about this OVA that I like, and then, like, this one really huge sticking point that just does not fit.
And it's such a short part of the runtime, too.
Yeah, it feels like such a small, tiny part of the OVA, which I guess is, like, another thing against it. Like, this should be about Neki Basra falling in love with space whales.
Yeah.
Like, this whole thing about, like, this whole side... You cannot have a plot about sexual assault be the B plot. That's not okay.
Yeah. But anyway, we'll see how this specific trash fire in this television OVA program is dealt with in the next bit, because I think it gets swept under the rug, whales are good.
I don't want to end this episode on such a downer note, but hey, that's the OVA's fault.
It's better that we, like, get into it instead of, like, dancing around it, because it's just, like, fuck, man.
We might want to put, like, a content warning at the start of this episode. I think that would be a good thing to throw in.
Adding that into the notes.
Okay, good call.
Okay.
Just because, like, you know, I feel like it's visceral enough that it kind of goes past the haha anime hijinks.
Yeah. It just feels really fucking sleazy.
It's not great.
But anyway, whales are good. Basara's good. Stuff with Elma's cute. Graham's cool. Whales, Dylan. Kujira.
Cut out the B-plot, and so far this thing is like a solid 9 out of 10 for me.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm enjoying those parts of this. But anyway, do you have any other thoughts? Because I'm spent.
Yeah, man, I feel really bad that we had to end the episode like this. So let me think of something positive to say.
Okay.
If there is something to gush about that, like, this OVA is worth recommending. Like I said earlier, the plot feels tighter. It feels like it suffers less from Monster of the Day antics. The setting, I really do love the setting, but I think the most important thing about this is it's fun to just watch Basara, you just dropped him into a new location, and he has this wide-eyed wonder of a child, and he's just looking for inspiration everywhere he goes, and there is something so pure about that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think... Everything I love about this OVA so far, the reason why I'd even be willing to say, like, this is the highlight of Macross 7 for me, is due to those things.
Gotcha. And
again, there's, like, a little nasty sticking point, but, like, for what it's worth, I think everything regarding Basara is so good, and it is so true to his character, and the new setting is, like, so, like, directly marketed to me specifically. That, like, I really have been enjoying my time with this OVA. And I guess, like, to end on a positive note, I do want to, like, highlight and emphasize those points.
I have a feeling you'll like Delta's setting when we get to it, because they're on a very tropical planet themselves, what they're That's all based exciting. Out. So
that's Which, exciting.
That I'm excited for that Delta movie to see that eventually, because, you know, some guy who captained a spaceship and his big bulby advisor man are in that movie. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm excited to see that. But anyways, As always, you can find us at our home, anchor.fm/dudeyourremember. They put us out on your listening platform of choice. And if they have a review thing, feel free to write about us if you'd like to. We always like hearing from you. Additionally, to do that, you can check us out at dyrmcast@gmail.com. And if you want to shout at us, as always, we are at Twitter at dudeyourremember. Huge thanks to Chris Eakins, artist, game developer. Dude does a lot of cool shit for Wrist System, for Brian the Show's key art. Check out more of Chris's work. Check out at @WristSystem_game on Twitter. Wrist System is out on everything pretty much, so go get out of your Switch. Go get on itch. It's just go check it out. It's a fun game.
I want to say the only thing it's not on right now is PlayStation.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I think it's on its way there, but not yet.
Okay.
And then Dylan, take me backstage and tell me about your space whales.
No space whales, unfortunately.
Ah, bummer. But
yeah, it is. It's a mega bummer, dude. I'm involved in two other podcasts. The first of which is Backstage Gaming, where I talk with our friend of the show, Chris Wilson. We talk about video games and storytelling, and you know, sometimes we even just kind of fuck around. It's a video game podcast. Chris and I were theater majors, and so we let that education kind of inform the topics we talk about. And if that sounds cool to you, you can check us out at www.bsgpod, that is bsgpod.com. You can also find us on social media, where you can find us on Facebook, on our Twitter, where our handle is @bsg_cast. We are on all of the wonderful channels that you can also find Dude, You Remember Macross, and I think that's everything I have to say about that. It's fun. I love recording. Chris is a fun dude. He's also a hunk. A himbo, some might say.
Yes.
I am also involved in the Unexplored Places, an actual play podcast. We are on season two. We are almost close to wrapping up season two, Tango Sector, which is a science fiction story where we play, you know, a Firefly-esque cast of smugglers and villains using the system Scum and Villainy. And if that sounds cool to you, you can check them out on unexploredcast.libsyn.com or on their Twitter @unexploredcast.
Dope. And if you want to hear more from us individually about our nonsense, I'm on Twitter @RiderStrike. And then Dilla, where can they be thrilled by ya? Ha ha ha
ha ha. Yes, my Twitter handle is @TheDilla. That is THA_DILA.
Fantastic. Well, all right, everybody. We'll get more. We'll get some more whale action. Maybe hear an angel's voice in the next part. So till then, take care. Toodaloo.
Goodbye, everyone.